Hello, this is Down the Back of the Seats. I'm Ellen, cinema manager at Campbelltown Picture House.
And I'm Alistair, a theatre and filmmaker from the Isle of Mull.
Alistair, what is this podcast about?
This podcast explores what happens when public spaces and the public meet. What's left behind? What's been found that's unexpected? What stories are there to tell? It's tales from behind the scenes at the cinema, theatre, concert hall, wherever people meet, linger, and leave things or bits.
Were you doing that so slowly because I was coughing and spluttering and trying to drink water in the background? I appreciate that.
Yes.
Thank you. I've got a bit story for you.
Oh, fantastic. At long last. Go for it. Bits ahoy in that awful biscuit range.
I was thinking about it earlier, whether I could tell the story without... I can certainly do it without implicating anyone, unless they know who they are. And I would be astonished if they were listening to this podcast. So it's a story via Ian. I'll ask Ian if I can drop his voice note in, and I'll have another listen to it. That voice note that I got from him when I'd gone home, and he was dealing with the aftermath of two people who came to see A Complete Unknown, which is the Bob Dylan film. And they arrived, it was all, as happens quite a lot at CPH, everybody in the audience, we knew them. So we weren't, you know when people come in, you don't get worried. We knew every single person in that building, apart from two. Ooh. Who were quite sort of chatty when they came in, not overly worried about them, didn't recognise them. Fine. They went in, they bought a load of snacks, spent an absolute fortune.
Oh, good on them. They can come again.
Yeah, well, can they though?
Oh, they've made such a mess. About 30 minutes ago, the woman left without saying anything. She just got up and left it, so I went, oh, maybe she's not wanting to see it or she's wanting to go do something else. But anyway, and just there, some people have came out and went, there's someone sleeping in there, we can't get him to wake up. And I'm thinking, Christ. So I'm like, right, okay. Because I don't know who he's going to answer. Anyway. Because what I did was I propped open the door. I've still got it propped open. And he's sitting in row H, sitting like on top of the, please be considerate to those using the wheelchair, blah, blah, blah. But it's the row in front they've made a mess of. So I'm trying to wake him up. I'm saying, hello, shaking him. He eventually comes to, and he's like this. I'm like, are you all right? And he's like looking around as if to say, where the hell am I? So I eventually got him up. It was like his clothes are all over the cinema. Like his shoes were in two different seats. His jacket was over somewhere. His thingy was over somewhere. His hat was over somewhere. So I'm saying, right, come on, get up. You know, being quite thingy with him. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. I went, oh, that's all right, come on. So I'm saying to him, is it too much to drink? Oh, I've had way too much to drink, but I've not been doing any drugs. And I went, no, that's all right. I was like, but come on, it's time to go now, some fresh air. Right, okay. Took him about 4 minutes to get from the wheelchair seat to the door. Eventually went out, stumbled out, and I'm saying to him, are you going to get home okay, blah, blah, blah. Are you sure you're going to, is there anyone coming for you? No, I'll be fine. Went, right, whatever. And as I'm coming in, the customers are still there. I don't know them, but... is her name or booking was under that couple and the two kind of bald guy and his wife. One of them must have ran in and looked at his seat and he pulled out a fully drunk bottle of Famous Grouse. So that's clearly what he's been drinking away at. But I'm looking at the mess right now. The popcorn, which she came out and got, I don't think you were here for that, it's all on the floor. The sweets they had aren't even open. The bottles of water's on the floor. Nothing seems to be, like, spilled in the flare, but there's... who is that? Wait, let me give this a sniff. No, that's the cider. Oh, dear me. No shift's the same. No shift's the same.
But it's the first... we've not had very drunk people for quite a while. The last one was the woman who came to see Bohemian Rhapsody and then refused to leave at the end. Because
why?
Well, because you should be able to buy a ticket at the beginning of the day and stay throughout the day, regardless of what film is on, because that's what used to happen. Now, she wasn't that old, so I mean, this is what used to happen in sort of the 40s.
Yeah, but, yeah.
But it hasn't happened.
You just enter at any point in the film and it just carry on playing, yeah.
Yeah, that hasn't happened for quite some time, certainly not even in my childhood, when she was around about my age, maybe a little bit older. Drunk people, it must be, it is the season of it, but we weren't expecting trouble in a complete unknown.
And do you know if they're local people or not? Are they?
Yes, we have now discovered further information about their identities.
And returned their clothing to them.
not getting anywhere near them. But that was, yeah, it was a bit of drama for poor Ian on a quiet Sunday night with sort of seven other people in the building, all of whom were in first name terms for with.
Excuse me, sir. Yeah. Excuse me, sir. Oh, poor Ian, that's not easy at all.
I know. Oh. The other bit of news is that we've got a new staff member.
Oh, who's that?
His name is Ross. He is a 10-year-old child.
Fantastic.
Wait, how old is
Get
Ross?
Him down the mine.
Eight. I think he's eight. So it's Gemma's son. You know, you've met Wee Ross. Wee Ross has been wanting a job since he was able to speak. And so now he comes in with his mum when she's working. And his job is to keep the fridge stocked up. So it's like having a sort of tiny runner. So whenever
the right height for
Yeah. Whenever someone buys something, Ross runs to the back, gets the whatever they've just bought, puts it in the fridge to keep the fridge stocked. He's really good. He's a really good worker. And he gets paid in popcorn, juice and the odd coin. So it's child labour, underpaying him. Overworking him. The conditions are very poor. The language spoken around him is extremely inappropriate. But he's having the time of his life. He's better than some people I've employed before.
Of course. That's fab.
Yeah.
And what's been a big success this week? How did Complete Unknown go down? Was it successful?
Middling. It's not been huge. Nothing's been. Better Man has been a pretty big seller.
Which one's that again?
That's the Robbie Williams one.
Oh yeah, the monkey one. That's not done so well globally.
It's done absolutely abysmally globally.
Yeah.
It's a huge flop, as if anyone couldn't see that coming. A person who's only really famous in the UK and Australia, and he's played by a monkey. The film is superb. I think it's absolutely brilliant. I love it.
Who are the team behind it?
The director is, you're not going to like this, the guy who directed The Greatest Showman.
Oh, right, okay. Well, no, clearly they know what they're doing in terms of spectacle.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I don't know who else. I don't know if it's Andy Serkis is behind the... I mean, Andy Serkis, the person, isn't behind the actual monkey. But I don't know if Andy Serkis's company is behind the movement.
Right. Oh, God, it's a shame if they've lost all that money then.
Yeah, it's done really, it's really, really poorly received.
Have
you seen the stuff online of Americans going, who the hell is Robbie Williams? Who the hell is this guy?
Oh, no.
I saw
a moment of Rock DJ on YouTube. And I thought it was an incredible spectacle. It's absolutely amazing.
It's so good. The film is so good. The whole thing. Rock DJ, the sequence of Rock DJ is extraordinary. Even not really knowing a lot of the references, you know, because I grew up with, I was in peak Take That age, but
you have to phone the number?
I was at the stage where I was being contrary to everything. So yes. If Take That were really popular, then I had to hate Take That. Because I was being cool. I was being the one that didn't like Take That. Now I quite like them. Gone back. It was really fun. But at the time.
Some good songs, yeah.
Yeah, so there was quite a few references that I didn't get and quite a few references that I did get just from osmosis of living through it. But
I tell you though, if ever an animated version of the Portishead life story comes through, Beth Gibbons as a small marmoset,
it would do about as well as Better Man has done, unfortunately. That's such a shame because it's so good. But if you don't know who he is, it really, and it, well, that was got me thinking about biopics of very British people.
Oh, yes.
Or the other way around. So
Eddie the Eagle Edwards.
Exactly that, yeah, Eddie the Eagle. And I forgot to look up how well that did around the world, but I imagine not terribly well, and not that great in Britain, I wouldn't think. But it was, that was a nice film.
I'm not a fan of Dexter Fletcher's work at all. I think I've said that before. No, I don't like his work
at all.
Did
you not like Sunshine on Leith?
I fucking hated it.
Okay, good.
No, I didn't really enjoy it at all. I found it very annoying. There's a lovely ideas in it, and the music's great, but and fine performances, but no, I didn't like it at all.
Oh, I enjoyed it. Sunshine and Leith was the trigger for me moving back from New Zealand.
Really?
Yeah, it's in the bit with the letter to America where they say Sutherland no more, and Sutherland is where my heart is.
Dear to your heart.
And yeah. I was like, oh yeah, I need to go home. I need to go back, and then didn't end up in Sutherland. But that and Paddington.
Quite the opposite end, actually. Yeah. Similar in some ways.
Yeah. And then like biopics that went sort of the opposite way. So there's one coming out next week called Saturday Night, a film called Saturday Night, which is about Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yes.
And it looks really good, but we don't have that sort of connection with Saturday Night Live. So I'm wondering how it'll do in this country. Presumably it'll do quite well in America, but you know. And did you ever see the either It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood or the Mr. Rogers documentary?
Hello neighbor. No, I always found Mr. Rogers really creepy when I was wee, so I didn't want to.
Did you know about him when you were little?
He was referenced in various comedy things and other bits and bobs, and you'd see kind of archive stuff of him every now and again. So I did know of him when I was younger, but I never really saw a full thing. I didn't get it. But yeah, he seemed to be a very, very noble and very, very kind man, informed by a deep faith. But it seemed so alien to, the approach seemed so alien to sort of British sensibilities and Scots sensibilities. He's not. I think Robin Williams referenced him in some movie, and that set me off and like find out who he was.
The first I'd ever heard of him was watching. I think the documentary is called "Won't You Be My Neighbor?" Mm. And I watched.
Was it good?
It's really good, and I immediately loved him. And he does. It genuinely seems to be that he was such a nice, kind human being.
A genuine fellow. Yeah, no, I think that's... No, I just couldn't understand it when I was younger. I was like, oh, what is this? But I was too old for it by the time I discovered it anyway. But, there's some... Films about children's TV are always quite interesting as well. There's a brilliant one called Death to Smoochie. I don't know if you've ever seen that at all.
No, I haven't.
Danny DeVito, I think, is one of the great comedy directors. I think Danny DeVito is an exceptional director. And it's Robin Williams and Ed Norton, I think. It's a very dark take on things. It's about, basically it's Barney the dinosaur having stolen the crown of another children's entertainer, and it's a sort of warfare between children's entertainers. It's great. It was really, really, I think it calls just about the age to see it now, so I think I'm going to watch it again soon.
Is it called
Death to Smoochie?
Right, okay, writing that down. I've got a correction from last week when I said Gemma Redgrave. I, of course, meant Vanessa Redgrave.
Well,
I am a dweeb. I don't know why I said Gemma Redgrave. Vanessa Redgrave would have been more likely and was the person that I was supposed to be, that I was talking about. I have not seen Gemma Redgrave play Prospero. I've seen Vanessa Redgrave play Prospero.
I watched a film last night called Love and Friendship with Georgia, which is a Jane Austen adaptation
have seen it.
It was really, I'm not the biggest fan of Jane Austen. I mean, I think it's really interesting, but I struggle with those kind of super long sentences that even I say sometimes, but you know, those kind of really long expositionary sentences that happen all the way through everything. And this was very much, because it's based on a series of letters in an epistolary novel, or what you call it, it was quite sort of, and now I'm talking a bit more. And it was Gemma Redgrave was in it, and she played quite different to type. It was really nice to see her being quite sort of not high drama and subtle, and she's really good.
Mm.
Love and Friendship was really nice. It clearly owes a lot to Barry Lyndon straight away. It references that straight away. But it was good. It's just good fun, actually. It was really nice. So, yeah, if you're looking for something very gentle to watch, that's Kate Beckinsale. Oh, my gosh, she's very good. She's a talented actor. And then Justin Edwards being lovely, and loads of other people. And there's some really nice, subtle playing, and then some stupid overplaying. It's great.
Good. Do you want to talk about David Lynch?
Yeah. So, David Lynch is dead. And that's quite hard, really, because he's one of these people that's just so different. There's no other voice in the creative arts that's like him. His films have meant so much to me over the years, and I've actually still not seen Eraserhead or Wild at Heart, and I have a policy of rationing things to try and make them last, you know, as long as they can. The magic lasts as long as it can. I've not read all of Kurt Vonnegut's novels, even though he's kind of one of my favourite authors, and likewise Steinbeck, Margaret Atwood. I've not read them all because I'm trying to ration them, so I've got things to look forward to in the future. And Eraserhead and Wild at Heart are the two of his that are sort of waiting to be seen. He just had a vision that was unlike anything else. His vision was like, when I teach film, I'm always talking about how it's a medium of sensation. It's a medium of pre-rational thought. It's about kind of following the impulse. And there were so few filmmakers that follow the impulse so purely as David Lynch. Season 3 of Twin Peaks is kind of, to me, is the most complete artistic vision I've seen of anything ever. A lot of people don't like it, and that's totally fine. But it's just, it's such a complete artistic vision. It's amazing. So it's hard to talk about it, actually, as my sort of stuttering and greeting has proven. But he's just brilliant. A really, really brilliant filmmaker, and seemed to be a thoroughly decent guy as well. And I know friends had met him, and he was very kind. Very, very kind to them. And Mark Frost, who wrote Twin Peaks with him, said on his passing that the man from another place has gone home. And I think that's exactly it. He was from somewhere else with such a unique vision. And Kyle MacLachlan as well wrote beautifully about his passing too. So if you get a chance to see Kyle MacLachlan's take on the David Lynch's passing, it's just stunning, really nice. He says it's going to take a long time to put language around what he's feeling, and I think that's what so many people are feeling. He's great, just the best. So what a best him, wherever he goes. We've got a request for an episode as well. One of the listeners has been in contact to request a sex special. So, which I think is quite amusing. People who have been coital in cinemas to leave anonymous messages.
Actual audiences. Is it?
Yes.
Who is this filthy listener? Who's
this listener is and you can bleep this out. This listener, of course, is.
Yes, my nemesis. I've forgotten why he's my nemesis. Why is he my nemesis?
I can't remember now. But there will be reason.
does he want to know when people have actually had sex in the cinema?
What are there stories around it? The comedies, or, you know, have children been conceived in row D, or and I was saying about when we were chatting about it, there's a brilliant bit in The Spy Who Loved Me, the book by Ian Fleming, which is the most non-Bond book there is of the Bond books. It's basically about a young woman and her journey through life and sexuality, and it's really good. I found it really quite hard hitting book. And there's a romantic encounter that happens in a cinema in Cambridge, I think it is, in that, and it's like, ugh.
I wonder which cinema that is then.
And the cinema manager comes in and goes, "Oi, you, stop that!" and it's been speculated, is that actually a tale from Ian Fleming's own life, because he's quite similar to the cad that was depicted in the story.
It's just not on. You're not adhering to the code of conduct in the cinema if you're doing that sort of thing. I have found a bra. That's my only... I'm racking my brains. There's been... Oh, no, that story is too... It's just too unpleasant to tell.
Oh, go on. You've got to. We've gone there now. So, listener, if you want to skip forward, you can skip forward, a minute, you say?
It's just grim. It's not amusing. It's just grim. So, my friend... who used to work at the Duke of... Yeah, fuck it. The Duke of York's in Brighton. and I was managing the Duke's at Comedia. So they were both picture houses, so we shared stuff. And Graham came over to work at Duke's at Comedia and told a story about how he'd had to clean ejaculate off the mirror of the disabled toilet that afternoon because somebody had gone in there. I don't know what the film was, whether it was in response to the film or whether it was just an
issue.
But within the cinema, I don't think I've got any stories. I found a bra once, which could have been related. I don't know. But back in the days when I used to sit up in the projection room while the film played. Yeah. I was expecting more. I was expecting more intrigue and excitement, but I never saw anything particularly scandalous.
So unless listeners want to write in with their tales of things they've encountered in cinema, I think the sex special might just be that 1 minute and 15 seconds.
I bet Cliff will have some stories. Right, then, anonymous writer in a sex in cinema.
So if anyone wants to send any notes on that, and you're more than welcome, obviously.
That is a trope of films, though. People seem to meet in cinemas and have a conversation, and you think, shut up, stop it.
Yeah.
Or they'll have an argument in the cinema or something. Oh, it's very annoys me. It takes me right out of it every time.
In America, they certainly talk a lot more in the cinema. I remember going, as I've said this before, but I remember going with a girlfriend to see... Oceans 13, I think it was, or something like that, Oceans 12, something like that. And we were sat together in New York watching a film, and she was just chatting to me all the way through. I was like, I'm trying to watch a film. Even though I hadn't seen her for 6 months, it was like, oh, come on now. but then a very good representation of that we saw the other night in What We Do in the Shadows, the vampire TV programme with Matt Berry and all that. There's a moment where Nandor, the... the invincible, or whatever he's called, the wonderful vampire, takes a new friend to the cinema. It's like, don't talk, shush. And it's like, yeah, that's how you do it.
That sounds like it's come straight from the mouth of Taika Waititi. I've been watching some horror films recently.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, well, I watched three in quick succession because of a guest.
Oh, yes, I had one to say about that as well. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Because of a guest that we're hoping to catch up with in a few episodes' time. So I was re-watching some of the films that he's been in, which is a lot of kind of horror, shonky. Not shonky. What's the word? What's the word for really fun that doesn't sound disparaging? Like schlock. Really, really fun, huh?
Schlock?
No, schlock. I suppose schlocky. Like really enjoyable, really well put together.
Yeah.
But hilariously.
Yeah.
I don't want to say bad because they're not bad. They're great. Anyway, no. I watched them. Chucky, The Cult of Chucky, which is most recent Chucky film.
Any good?
Yeah, it's great. It's just so much fun. It knows exactly what it is, and it knows exactly what its audience wants. And it winks. It probably, in some instances, literally winks at the audience. Chucky does speak to the audience a couple of times. It's so much fun. It's pantomime. I loved it. And I watched a film called Here for Blood, which is a wrestling slash horror film. And it is, again, it is preposterous and brilliant. And there is so much blood everywhere. Every injury is filmed in great detail with blood sort of spurting up the walls and heads exploding. It's great. And then I watched Stranded, which is a sci-fi horror film, which is not as fun.
Okay.
It's taking itself a little bit more seriously. But anyway, Michael Terrier, who we're hopefully talking to in a couple of weeks, is very good in all of them. But cool. Seems to be having more fun in Cult of Chucky and Here for Blood. Anyway, but that got me to thinking, because as I was watching certainly Cult of Chucky and Here for Blood, I missed not having an audience with me. Mm-hmm. And it struck me that one of the great audience experiences now is reserved very much for horror and for the type of horror that Cult of Chucky is. That sort of really silly.
Yeah.
I keep saying silly, and it's not, that's the wrong word, because that entertaining. It sounds denigrating, but fun, I suppose.
Yeah, entertaining.
Yeah, entertaining, where it's completely ridiculous. You know, why would you go into that dark room?
Yeah.
Because that's the trope of the horror, and everybody in the audience knows, so you can have that reaction. And comedy horrors have done quite good business, because they tend to be fairly low budget. And they do really well in cinemas, in cities.
Yeah, the shared experience thing, yeah.
The shared experience, I think we're now, the only time when I miss an audience is comedy and horror. So if you put those two things together and make low budget films, maybe that's where cinema should go. It wouldn't work for my cinema, because we're in a very rural area and I don't have enough horror fans, but that's sort of, you know, all night sitting there, shrieking together and going ooh together, and
yeah, that's lovely.
Yeah, I don't know. Just got me.
That's a
thinking. I don't like horror films, but I like that sort of horror film.
There's one horror movie you recommended to me that was excellent though. It's got him from The West Wing in it. It's based on H.P. Lovecraft stuff. The Joss Whedon one. Is it Joss Whedon?
Yeah. Oh, Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods. You recommended that to us, and Georgia and I loved it. It was
great. Yeah, that's spectacular. Well, because that's taking the tropes of horror films and really putting them front and center and making it more. Yeah. The less you know about Cabin in the Woods before you watch it, the better. But it's impossible to recommend it without saying that it's doing something different with the horror. But it's great. Yeah, Cabin in the Woods is great. And having watched Cabin in the Woods, when you go back to watch something like Here for Blood, which I watched the other day, which really it's all of those things. It's
Tucker and Dale versus Evil's another great one as well.
That's a really good example.
Alan Tudyk, amazing. Yeah,
he's Alan Tudyk's great in that.
So I watched a British folk horror. I like folk horror movies. I'm really interested in folk culture, obviously. And
I do not like and so folk horror movies.
Oh, have you never seen Robin Redbreast?
I am afraid.
Oh, well, I guess you do live rurally as well, that's a thing. But
it's not as rurally as you. How do you watch a folk horror film and then let Ripley out for her life? Yeah, just going to take Ripley out in the dark amongst all these spooky trees and bracken.
I love it. It's just great. I will quite frequently, when it comes to Christmas time, I'll listen to The Dark is Rising in the dark with my torch on and go for long dog walks. And it's just, oh, love it. No, but this one is called, I read the book of it at Christmas time, called Starvaker, and I thought it was a really interesting book. I really enjoyed it. Really, it's a folk horror story, and it's got lots of the folk horror tropes in it, and some really good imagery within it, really, really connected with. And it's a fine piece of writing. Not the best thing I've ever read, not the worst thing I've read, but I enjoyed it a lot. Anyway, watch the film on BFI Player on Amazon. And it's Morfydd Clark, the wonderful actor that's Galadriel in the Lord of the Rings things, and also was in Love and Friendship. And Matt Smith, who had formerly been Doctor Who as well. And within the first 8 minutes of the film, they'd given the twist of the book away, and it was like, oh.
Oh, no.
And then the rest of it was just kind of quite dull and then not very good. And it was like, oh.
I mean, that was presumably a deliberate choice, but is the twist of the book at the end, is it a twist?
It's towards the end, so you get a bit more kind of velocity at the end of that. Whereas this, by revealing what the structure of what happens earlier on, it loses any velocity. Like, the story doesn't really build. It just sort of just stays, it limps along and just, oh, that's happened now. Oh, there we go, that's happened now. Aye. So it's a bit, I was really disappointed. It's beautifully shot, really, really nice, low budget, and makes the most of its environment that's shot in. The really location stuff's excellent, and really good use of kind of foggy kind of distances, and the performances, considering they've been asked to do such pish, is great. You know, they really, they've both put a lot into it, and it's essentially three people in it, and there's some special effects stuff, practical effects on a hair that are very interesting, but overall it was, no, I was disappointed. I was really, I'd enjoyed the book, and there was definitely a really interesting film to be made in there, but the dramaturgy of it, you know, finding the dramatic structure of it, was deconstructed to allow it to kind of become more of a mood piece. But it could be both a mood piece and have dramatic structure, to my taste, in the other way. But anyway, that was yeah, I was disappointed by that, because I do love a good folk horror. Robin Redbreast and Penda's Fen by Alan Clark. A lot of them have kind of TV roots of kind of Play for Today stuff. And they just, the scale of that budget and the scale of the storytelling is just right. Penda's Fen, if you've never seen it, Ellen, I recommend very, very strongly. It's, have you seen Wicker Man?
The Wicker Man, yeah.
Yeah. So it's not as scary as The Wicker Man.
Wicker Man isn't that scary, creepy.
I was freaked out. Well, I've seen it, you know, dozens of times, but when we saw it in the cinema, when Jim Lee and I got to see it the last year before last, when The Wicker Man was revealed, I was awestruck by what I was seeing, because it was so powerful in the cinema. That gravity of the large image was just like, whoa. I saw a swear word went thump and fell out my mouth. Penda's Fen isn't as scary as that, and it's really, really good. It's amusing. By David Rudkin, a fantastic dark theatre writer, Sons of Light and things like that. It's a piece by him about the son of a vicar in a remote town, discovering his sexuality, and crossed over with the myth of the last of the kind of Celtic warriors down there to fall, Penda, and his last stand. It's a really good portrayal of the interior life of a teenager. It's wonderful. You're not going to watch it, are you?
No.
That's one for your dad, although he's probably seen
it. Yeah, my dad will watch it.
Cool. Lovely to spend time with you. Thank you so much. And lovely to speak to you, listener. And hope you're well, wherever you are.
Next week, sex special.
Sex. You can tell, you can put this in if you want, but I've been having problems with snoring for a while, and I'm trying to get, you know, sleeping just right and everything. Georgia and Colin and I were down in Newcastle, staying in a Premier Inn last month, and sleeping really well, and Georgia was awake in the middle of the night just a bit, and I just, in my sleep, turned around to Georgia and said, sex, and then just went back to sleep. So God, there's my subconscious at work.
Thanks.
Anyway, it's right. More likely to be food.
Yeah.
Keep well. See you soon.
Goodbye. Bye. Thank you.